Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
He's back, ladies and gentlemen. He's back and in the flesh. And if you are one of our Patreon supporters, also in the flesh, although that is entirely at your discretion, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to patrons, including David Morris, our most recent patron, supporting us directly. And for just the coffee price or price of coffee, or maybe a couple per month, you can join people like David and get access to our full-length ad-free show, listen to us live, chat with us as we record live, and get our Patreon exclusive show Extra Message. Go to patreon.com/UKTech to find out more. And speaking of Extra Message, this is going to tie in slightly, Ian, to a little preamble I wanted to talk about as to why I'm able to even speak to you at all right now. But first, just want to check, how was your holiday?
Oh, it was great. Very nice indeed. Nice to be away. Nice to not have to sit at a desk all day and get some rest. Yes, it was very nice. Very, very resting.
Oh, good. I'm very glad. Well, we did miss you.
That's very kind of you.
Last week. But we had Andy on.
Yes. Always a good contributor to this show, Andy.
He was good value.
Has he got his broadband installed yet?
Well, he has, and clearly one of my co-hosts hasn't listened to last week's episode.
No, I haven't, I must admit.
That's okay, mate, you were on holiday. but Andy and I did talk about broadband because he just had HyperOptic installed, and we've had GigaClear laid into the ground here, fibre to the premises, not had it activated. And I was talking last week about, well, maybe we should switch from Virgin Media to GigaClear because their upload speeds are, you know, basically a gigabit up and gigabit down. Anyway, I sort of thought, I ummed and ahed and waited. And then on Thursday, Virgin Media decided to go down. And when I mean go down, I don't mean like it does on occasion for an hour or two and it's not the end of the world. I mean it's still not back up at the time of recording on Sunday afternoon. It's been 4 days. And it's not just our house. It's not
You're kidding me.
No, it's not even just our postcode. But there are reports from miles around of people's broadband being out. In fact, if you call Virgin Media, the first thing that comes up as the automated response is if you're calling about the fault, and I assume that that's capital T, capital F, they prompt you about it. I've been getting email alerts every few hours, and every single few hours, we expect this to be completed by 6 p.m. and then 6 p.m. comes on and we expect this to be fixed by 10 p.m. and then 10 p.m. comes along and it says we now expect this to be fixed by 9 a.m. the next day. And
mate,
that's just gone on and on for several.
That's nuts. I mean, I've had some problems with Virgin in the past with it being down for extended periods, but that is unprecedented.
This is really bad. And, you know, it wouldn't be as awful if, you know, Kate and I weren't working from home and both heavily rely on the internet. I mean, most people who are working from home heavily rely on the internet. But when you're working with, as Kate does, as a graphic designer and uploading large design files for manufacturing, or I'm working in video and uploading large video files or podcasts and things like that, you know, it's even harder to rely on just tethering to a phone on 4G.
Yeah, now, I mean, it only goes so far, doesn't it?
It does. Now, that raises the topic I wanted to run by you, because we did an extra message where I explained why, if you were to look at my house, you would see a camera tripod on the roof with a phone strapped to the very
no
top.
No way.
Yes way.
Have you got a photograph of this?
I posted a photo on the post for that episode of Extra Message. That's it. Patreon.com/UKTech. I think anyone who sees that can probably see the picture. If you're listening to this and you want to see that, just go to UKTechShow.com, find the episode for this this episode of Text Message, and I'll post the photo there. Maybe someone in our live chat can dig it up and just save it. I don't have it on in front of me, unfortunately, but feel free to save the JPEG and just post into the Discord. But basically, I found that although we do have 5G in this area, it's really difficult to get 5G with a really good downstream and upstream if you're in the house, because obviously 5G is not brilliant at penetrating bricks. It can do it, but not super well, and certainly not super well for two people who work in media to reliably be uploading and downloading things, let alone also streaming media in the evenings or playing Xbox or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So it turns out I am a bit of a genius, and you'll see the photo there in Discord. Thank you for posting that. And again, that'll be on the show notes if you want to go and have a glance. It was originally in the garden, but it just wasn't quite performing. So I got out a ladder and climbed onto the roof and mounted it on the roof instead, and then hardwired it with a USB cable and then a 10-meter, 30-foot USB extension cable into the house and into my Mac, the main Mac in the office here. And then I turned off the Wi-Fi on the Mac and plugged an Ethernet cable into the back of the Mac, wired that Ethernet cable into the main router slot on my Airport Express. Airport Extreme, which is, you know, kind of like an extender for the router. And then I configured the software in the Airport Extreme to take in a signal and broadcast out a new network and to forward all the ports as best as is possible, because they don't support UPnP, unfortunately. But basically forward it, and it worked. And so what we've actually ended up with is a very, very, very good 5G connection coming
That's
into the
mad.
House via a computer into a repeater that broadcasts a 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi network.
What phone have you strapped to the roof?
That is an iPhone 12 Pro Max, my personal phone. So I haven't touched my phone now for 2 days, but it doesn't really matter.
Because it's on the roof.
But because everything syncs and everything forwards. So if I get an incoming call, it comes through to my iPad, or it comes through to my watch, or to my computer. And so that's been fine. And
it's waterproof, so if it,
and
you
it's
get
waterproof.
A shower.
And I checked with the cable, and the cable is sealed enough to, you know, withstand. I wouldn't keep it up there in a storm, for example, but we did have some light drizzle and it was okay. And it's 5G and it's unlimited usage. I mean, I'm always a little bit worried that I will get a warning for breaching some fair use policy I'm unaware of, but at least at the time of writing,
well, if you're three tend to be a bit prescriptive about how much tethering you can do, but I don't think EE is.
I can't imagine it. And, you know, we're getting speeds down about 400 megabits per second down. We're still only getting about 50 up. But
well, that's perfectly serviceable compared to Virgin.
Exactly.
Especially Virgin that's not working.
Perfectly serviceable. And so obviously, I am something of a genius, and there should be an award in some form for
this. If you say so.
But it's the only way I've been able to get around this. And so With the 1-2 punch of GigaClear installing in our area and offering this brilliant service that's super fast and actually cheaper than Virgin, and on the other hand, Virgin going down for 4 solid days and still no response, this morning I called up Virgin and cancelled.
Brilliant. I mean, that's the way to handle it. What did they say?
I said to the lady on the phone, I was like, I'll be honest, it's not that I'm not leaving because the service is down. I was just on the fence, and the service being down just tipped me over.
But I mean, not being able to fix a problem like that in 4 days and doing what Virgin does best, which is not communicating effectively about what the problem is and how they're planning to fix it, is, you know, that's a big problem. And I know this is anytime I've had a problem with Virgin, this has been exactly the same thing. It's not so much that it's a bad company, but it's the customer service bit of it isn't effective, and they aren't empowered, and a lot of them don't know what they can and can't do, and, you know, the information is disgraceful, and it relies heavily on you being bounced around internally until you can speak to someone who knows what they're talking about. But this is remarkable. And so how long is it going to take to get the GigaClear installed?
They said 3 weeks, and I had to give 30 days notice to Virgin, so it'll tie over quite well.
Yeah, that'll be fine. I mean, you've obviously got a serviceable 5G solution in the meantime, haven't you?
I mean, I'm hoping I don't have to leave this up there for the next 4 weeks.
That would be unoptimal, I would say, because at some point you're going to need to leave the house and you're probably going to need to take your phone with you.
I mean, even then, you know, the having it on the watch and on the iPad is pretty decent. But anyway, that happened. So it is via that that our live listeners are hearing me now.
Well, it's very good. It's very clear. It works very well. It's clearly got you out of a situation, because how would we do this podcast if it wasn't for your roof-mounted phone?
Yeah, this is the thing people don't think about when internet goes down. You're all busy thinking, oh, how do I look up health information? How do I live stream this event? None of that is as important as doing a podcast or downloading a podcast.
Indeed.
So anyway, if you want to hear the full story behind all that, that's out on Extra Message for our patrons. Go and check that out if you would like. Let's jump into some news. The BBC wrote this week that the UK's new information commissioner, a chap called John Edwards, who's currently actually in the same role, I think, in New Zealand, has been charged with the post-Brexit shake-up of data rules, which apparently will include getting rid of cookie pop-ups, at least in Britain. His predecessor, who is still in the role, the Commissioner Elizabeth Denham, said that Mr. Edwards would, quote, take on a role that has never been more important or more relevant to people's lives. True, I'd argue it's been pretty important and relevant during her tenure. But nonetheless, yes. She speaks the truth. Separately, in an interview with The Telegraph, the Oliver Dowden, who's our digital secretary, said the plans included getting rid of these endless, his quote, cookie pop-ups, which are common on most large sites, and we all know what they do. Now, at the time, they were marketed as a tool for complying with the GDPR, the EU's data laws, although this practice technically does predate GDPR coming into force. He said, this is Dowden, I believe, that high-risk sites will still need similar notices. I would assume this is like banks, maybe e-commerce or things, but many of them, he said, were pointless. In the official announcement, anyway, according to a BBC write-up, the government said it was going to prioritise making new data adequacy partnerships that would allow it to send people's personal data internationally. That's to all the usual places you would expect. And data adequacy in this sense means that there is an agreement in place that protects people in a similar way between two countries or territories. So, you know, if we want to be able to process European users' data, then Europe needs to be happy that we are behaving ourselves with its data as well as it behaves with our data. And that's, you know, it's been a bit of a sticking point in Brexit negotiations, as we will have all remembered. But what I think is particularly interesting about this, other than that we might finally be staring down the barrel of cookie pop-ups being a thing of the past in Britain, is I'm just very interested to see how Edwards is going to tackle the likes of Facebook, because he had some pretty strong views, some pretty strong words.
I love
well,
him for this.
About Facebook in particular, which after the massacre in Christchurch, the shootings at the mosque in 2019, he described, and this is a quote, in fact, Newsweek had this story, I should read the whole quote. This is the whole quote from Newsweek that he said at the time, quote, Facebook cannot be trusted. They are morally bankrupt, pathological liars who enable genocide, facilitate foreign undermining of democratic institutions. They allow the live streaming of suicides, rapes, and murders, continue to host and publish the mosque attack video, allow advertisers to target, quote, Jew haters and other hateful market segments, and refuse to accept any responsibility for any content or harm.
What now, a quote. I mean, I wish more quotes were like that.
Responding to Edwards, Facebook said in a statement at the time, it was, quote, deeply committed to strengthening our policies, improving our technology, and working with experts to keep Facebook safe. That's what Facebook said at the time. But by the by, no matter what you think of Facebook, that's what he said, and he is going to be in charge of data privacy policies and so forth for the UK once he takes over from Elizabeth Denham, who's had an interesting and I think broadly quite successful role in that position. So
completely
that's what's
agree
happening.
With him. That's fantastic. I mean, to start with the cookie thing, That's ridiculous. Like that's not part of GDPR anyway. As you said, it predates it. It's a completely separate set of rules, and moving away from GDPR is probably a mistake, unless we can guarantee the European Union that we're going to be better but still accept GDPR as good enough.
I don't think we're moving away from GDPR. I still think we'll be compliant by GDPR. It's more that
they want to do their own thing, don't they? They want to have a British laws.
Yes, but it has to be considered adequate, yes. i.e. To the same level as GDPR. Similar to how the United States has done for many things. It's sort of taken GDPR as a global baseline above which priorities should be positioned, not
underneath. But that being the case, what's the point of spending time and money rewriting a law that already sufficiently covers it? I mean, I'm sure there are things you could improve about GDPR, but I think I worry that having the concern amongst people who are, you know, in related industries is that changing from GDPR will cause problems between the UK and Europe, which will mean that there'll be extra red tape, not less red tape. Now, we've seen that already with many different Brexit things that I'm not qualified to speak about, but you can see experts talking about how, you know, allegedly getting rid of red tape actually leads to far more red tape, and that's problematic. I don't mind if they want to call it something else to make it look like they've done something. That doesn't bother me. But what I am very concerned about is that we end up in a situation where this is actually a way for the British government to attract tech companies here and therefore go easy on them from a data protection perspective, or it's a government plan to undermine rights in a way that we know they are keen to do, because the British government has already spoken about, you know, backdoors to encryption and all that kind of nonsense. And is this something to facilitate that? And obviously I can't say that it is, but I wonder what will shake out as we go through the process. It's concerning. But I welcome John Edwards to the UK because he sounds like an absolute genius.
I think if we stick to the broad policy of what GDPR aims to do, but we remove the cookie pop-ups, that is a world I'd be happy to live in, because I broadly agree yes. with what GDPR is and aims to achieve. And I think it does a decent job of holding large companies to account. Not without exception, of course, but in general, I'm in favor of it. And if we can keep something like it in play, I think that's a good idea. But the cookie pop-ups, they are a plague.
They are a stupid waste of everyone's time. Yeah. And I'm all for people being able to change those settings. But you look at the cookie pop-up settings for a lot of sites and they're not good enough. You know, really, you need to be able to say accept cookies, reject cookies, and that's it. And really, I don't know why the browser companies aren't more on top of this and why there isn't some global standard. Well, I mean, I guess I know why. It's because of capitalism. But I would like it to be the case that that you're able to just set your preferences in Firefox or Chrome or Safari and say, I will accept cookies to do with saving my data. I will not accept any tracking cookies. And I would like to block cookies from these providers, blah, blah, blah. And then that way, you customize your experience. You don't need to press yes or no or go through stupid settings that are incomprehensible in some cases, just to stop your data being leaked all over the internet. So I would welcome a sensible change, but I don't think that we're going to get one. And I also don't think companies are going to pull this thing from their site either. I think everyone's sort of put them, you know, they've invested in the system now. They're probably just going to leave it because it's not going to be illegal to carry on having a cookie pop-up message, is it?
That's a very good point. And also Nick asks a good question in our live chat and says, if we remove cookie pop-ups, but the EU requires it, won't the EU say that UK companies can't trade in the EU?
And that's possible.
That's where it will come down to the negotiation and whether the EU considers our data adequacy proposal adequate. And technically, I suppose, yes, it could if it came down to it. But it's high, as Ian says, it's very unlikely. And it's more likely that they'll come up with some kind of a system that they consider, you know, agreeable or acceptable. In the same way that these aren't mandated in other parts of the world, but they still have data adequacy agreements.
Yeah, it also doesn't work because if you go to, and this is something I've noticed as not a Facebook user, if you go to a Facebook page, you actually physically cannot reject the cookies. The only way to see a public Facebook page is to accept Facebook's cookies. It is a disgrace.
Well, this is what our new our new information commissioner, Jonathan Edwards, will be tasked with doing. You can absolutely guarantee that Ian and I will be paying attention, won't we?
Yep.
And I don't know exactly when he takes over. That's the only thing I was slightly missing, but certainly it's something we will be monitoring very closely. I'd like to talk about PayPal very briefly, Ian, because The Guardian wrote this week, while you were away, you know, doing nothing and getting paid to send your ass, that PayPal is to allow users in the UK to buy, hold, or hodl, depending on who you are, and sell cryptocurrencies through its platform for the first time. The firm said it was going to allow customers to choose from four types of cryptocurrency. They are Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash. No Dogecoin for you, Inu-san.
That's a shame.
Indeed. And that the service would be available via the PayPal app and its website. There'll be a crypto tab added to the platform, The Guardian continued, which shows real-time currency prices, as well as offering educational content to help answer common questions and learn more about cryptocurrencies, including potential risks, which is probably a very, very good thing, PayPal said. Now, Jose Fernandez de Ponte, the vice president and general manager for blockchain, crypto and digital currencies at PayPal, good job title, said the firm's service could help introduce more people to the technology, how it works, and help better shape the role currencies could play in the future. PayPal said the service would begin rolling out this week, so should be rolling out to people almost by the time you listen to this, I'm sure, and would be available to all eligible customers within a few weeks. It's also launched a similar service in the US, which lets people make purchases at participating businesses using cryptocurrency. Now, that feature is not something we've seen confirmed for the UK yet, but it does strike me that PayPal is sort of experimenting on consumers here. Is that a fair assessment? Because it's sort of picking country by country. You know, it is regulated here. It's not a bank, but it is regulated by the FCA.
Yeah. And does turn over information to relevant people, as I understand it.
So it's not that it's a bad place to be trialing it, but we've seen a lot of controversy over cryptocurrency, whether that's just ads getting banned on the Tube network for promoting
get-rich-quick schemes, essentially.
Yes. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong in buying and selling crypto, and that's certainly not what Ian and I are here to say. Well, certainly not what I'm here to say.
No, I've no problem with it at all if people know what they're doing.
But it is extremely volatile, and the guarantees and the safeguards that are there for fiat currencies are not there for crypto.
So, well, I mean, yes, but only because the stability of normal currencies is more. I mean, you know, you wouldn't be protected on PayPal if the US dollar suddenly took a nosedive or suddenly soared and the UK pound took a nosedive and you had a lot of US dollars in your PayPal account. You would be subject to the same sort of losses, I guess, if you'd thought, oh, I'll buy some dollars on PayPal and then get them back when the thing changed. You know, you could argue the same thing would be true then. So,
true.
I don't have a massive problem with it. I think I don't love PayPal. I think it's a company that has numerous problems, especially for people selling stuff online. It can be a hotbed of sort of the wrong way round fraud, if you want. It protects consumers quite well. But I don't think necessarily protects sellers quite so well. But you know, I mean, I don't see a problem with it offering crypto. I think that's a relatively straightforward and simple concept. And why not? I would worry about the charges because PayPal's famously, you know, chargy, isn't it, when you do stuff? So I wonder how good a deal it's going to be when you compare it to the existing cryptocurrency dealers like Coinbase and, you know, the others, none of which I could name because I've forgotten them all.
Yes. Well, there are a number of places you can, you know, you can buy, but a lot of those, they're things like eToro and Robinhood and what else are there? There's a whole bunch of these things where people trade stocks and they trade cryptocurrencies and all sorts of stuff. And that's where a lot of people do a lot of that trading, because you can buy the coin, or it's not a whole coin, is it? Let's be honest, it's a fraction of the coin, and trade it with other people, and you can essentially buy one crypto with another crypto, and you know, there's a whole big industry around it. But PayPal getting involved, I think, perhaps in the eyes of consumers, legitimizes the currency and provides, in their eyes perhaps, a sense of safety or security, because it's a brand they know, it's a brand they may very well trust and have used for many, many years. And my hope is that if people do take on this, the educational side of what PayPal's doing will be pretty visible and clear. And that customer support, frankly, is good, because in my experience with PayPal's customer support, it leaves something rather to be desired. You know, it's very difficult to get somebody from PayPal on the phone, unlike with a bank. And if you are worried about crypto, if you've stepped into this because PayPal has promoted it to you, albeit I'm sure in a perfectly reasonable way, then you may very quickly need some advice that is not as forthcoming through PayPal as it may be if you'd have done something through the bank. I don't know. I'm just hypothesizing at this point. It may be absolutely fine. But these are just some things to be aware of, I think. Did you notice here, that, by the way, that this isn't in our script, but I just remembered it, that the contactless card payment limit's being raised again in the UK to £100? £100.
Wow. So, well, it's good. I mean, increasingly I'm finding that I want that, really, because although I tend to use Apple Pay, and obviously the limits are different on Apple Pay, it is useful sometimes. If you're in a place that doesn't support Apple Pay, for example, and you're just using the contactless feature, it can be very useful indeed. So, yes, I generally support that, as long as it's, you know, people are not getting ripped off, which you don't hear many stories about it, do you? So presumably it's not a huge problem.
Exactly. I mean, this came up, and I have a feeling we may have even talked about it back when the budget was announced, because Rishi Sunak had announced it as part of the budget this year, that it was going to increase. And I think we may even have back then known it was going to be £100, but it was a huge rise. You know, it's £45 at the minute and for those of you unaware, I mean, I'm sure everyone's aware, contactless payments on a debit or credit card, you know what that is. In fact, it's only debit, isn't it, that this applies to, I think.
Well, maybe not, actually. No, it's probably credit as well, because I assume if you're paying on credit card, you're still using contactless, aren't you?
And this is actually, I'm completely off script here, but I have a funny feeling that the equivalent contactless limit in the EU is 45. I don't know if it's 45 euros or if it's just equivalent to £45, but that's something that we can increase now because of Brexit that we couldn't have done before, I think.
I have no idea.
But I'm fairly sure I think that's correct. And anyway, so from October in the UK, you will be able to contactlessly pay for things up to £100 in one go, which is amazing given that it started out as £10 back in the day.
Yeah.
£10, and everyone got very frightened about it, but it's steadily increased ever since. I've not heard of anyone that I know personally, at least, getting screwed over by contactless.
No, you can see how it would happen, though. You know, like if you got mugged, but then... You know, I guess if you could just as easily have £100 on your wallet in cash. In fact, as by sheer coincidence, I do have £100 in my wallet at the moment, which I will take out shortly and put in a safe place.
Ah, very nice. Apparently, and thanks to was it Nick who just shared this? Yes, Nick just shared a link to a story in our Discord that actually said that the BBC says nearly 2/3 of all debit card transactions are made via tap and go technology. 2/3.
Yeah, so, no surprise there. Much, much more convenient than, you know, touching a horrible dirty terminal.
I agree. Well, if you're excited about this, you know where to email, you know what to do. Drop us a line or leave us a comment on Twitter at TextMessagePod. You can use hashtag whatever the hell you like. Well, Ian, it's normally at this point in the show that I tell you about Daily Tech News Show and what it's been covering this week in the wider world of tech, but they've been running Experiment Week this week. So Tom's going to tell us something a little different this time.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, it was Experiment Week. We tried out new show ideas like The Tech John, a second look at the week's tech news headlines from African Americans, Photography for Today's Users, a try at an op-ed style of tech news, Ask a Luddite, where we brought in somebody who's skeptical about tech to talk tech, in-depth report on the Pegasus Project from NSO Group, a barbecue tech special, and a gaming checkpoint with Jen Cutter, all of that and so much more on Experiment Week, DailyTechNewsShow.com.
And if all of that isn't enough for you, ladies and gentlemen, then I suggest you go and check out Extra Message this week, as we promoted at the top of the show. So out for our patrons, UK Tech Show. No, other one. Patreon.com/UK Tech. If you want to go and listen to episode, 66 of Extra Message, which is all about my setup for getting 5G from the roof around the house. And of course, if you do become a patron, in order to get that, you get the entire back catalogue of Extra Messi, if you will, and Extended Shows and so on. Ian, it's great to have you back. Thank you for returning from holiday.
It's a true pleasure to be back, actually. I think we've done a nice little show.
I tease you a little bit, but it's important to have a break. I'm glad you did, but I'm glad to have you back.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can't keep working forever, can you?
And no.
Yeah, I feel like I spent a lot of August feeling extremely unwell. I had that tonsillitis, which was
killer.
I had my weird hoof problem, which was extremely upsetting. That's not completely gone away. I'm still waiting for a call back after an x-ray, but it still feels a bit weird. But yeah, who knows? So I felt like I definitely needed to get away because I haven't had a holiday for a long time. And whilst it was a family holiday with the children, which means that, you know, there are lots of things going on and all that kind of stuff, it still felt like a really nice break in a routine. So it was very
excellent.
Good.
I'm extremely pleased, mate. And thank you to everyone listening. And maybe if you'd like to leave us a review, if you've not done recently, do drop us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It makes such a huge difference. We talk about Patreon, but honestly, just as important is telling a friend or a colleague or a family member or leaving us a review. Honestly, it's super, super helpful. Please do it. If you enjoy the show and haven't done so yet, or for a while. But other than that, have a wonderful week, everybody, and Ian and I will see you next week.
Bye!
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.